Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Alexis Shepherd. She is a ninth-year educator in upstate South Carolina with both middle-level and elementary experience. After multiple encounters with burnout, a desire to take steps towards self-care led to the creation of her brand, The Afro Educator. Originally intended to facilitate connections with like-minded educators, a passion was ignited in Alexis to empower teachers towards wellness. In her work, Alexis seeks to create persuasive perceptions of wellness that will improve teacher outlook and sustainability. She champions teacher self-care through education, reflection, and dialogue. Alexis believes that by sharing stories, she can empower teachers to take control of their own narratives so that they can teach and live with joy. Welcome to the podcast, Alexis.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to have the opportunity to engage in discussion around this topic I'm so super passionate about.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches as an educator and managed to crawl out and how that led to the current work that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have had what I would consider two encounters with burnout. And so it started, I've been teaching for 9 years, like you just so eloquently stated, and I experienced my first burnout during year four. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it kind of took me a while to recognize that that's where I was, but I was extremely bitter. And I had this really sort of undying perception of what it took to do my job well. Mm-hmm. And so that meant that my lessons had to be dynamic and creative constantly. And so I poured a lot of time and energy and effort into finding these incredible lessons and these incredible resources. And at that time, that belief was also that in order for a lesson to be really incredible, it had to be purely original. And so I wasn't using sort of foundational building blocks that were already there. I was creating everything from scratch, yeah. Which took so much out of me. I had a large class that year. In that class were some students I had had 2 years previously when I had taught in second grade. I was teaching fourth grade at the time. And so I was just really stressed all the time. And that stress led to bitterness and resentment because I was living in this space where I thought that all of the things that I was doing were things that I absolutely had to do in order to do the job well. And so it just made me really angry. And I just kind of thought, well, I'm burned out and this is just a part of teaching. So I'll struggle through and that'll be that. And I remember my husband saying to me, oh my gosh, do we need to find you something else to do? How can I help you? He just had no idea how to support me because I was so angry all of the time and I was so devoid of energy that any additional energy that I had, rather than pouring it into things that were going to fill me up, I tried to reserve it and I just wasn't available for him, for friends, or really for anyone. I was kind of this island unto myself trying to gear myself up to go back into the classroom, you know, the next day. So that year, I just kind of was like, well, I burned out. This is a part of teaching. And I moved on. So then again, in year six, I didn't have quite the same experience, but I was very restless. I had a great group of students that year. They were easy, you know, as we call it. And I thought, you know, this will be a great time for me to get out. At this point, my burnout was more from frustration with the system mm-hmm. and just how education is set up and all of the expectations that are placed on us as educators to move our students, to affect the achievement in our students. And so I applied for 6 jobs. This was the 2017-18 school year. And I was like, this is going to be my year. And I applied for jobs that were within the education setting, but that were not classroom teaching. And I was really confident that at least one of those jobs was going to come through. And so I didn't do anything crazy, like give away my classroom stuff or share with anyone, like, hey, this is going to be my last year. But I was pretty certain that come summertime, I'm probably probably going to get some calls. I'm going to go through the interview processes and, you know, something will come of this. And so July of that year came and no emails, no calls, no nothing. And it was getting to that time where I needed to start going back to my classroom and prepping things for back to school. And I had a little bit of an emotional breakdown just thinking about the fact that I'm still going to be teaching. You know, I really didn't have any other options. Not working was not an option. And I hadn't gotten any of these jobs that I applied for. So I remember calling one of my friends and just, you know, crying on the phone to her about how upset I was and how anxious I was feeling and how tense I was feeling about reckoning with the fact that I was going to have to return to or continue to teach. And I went to her house shortly thereafter, maybe a day or two later. And one of the things that I recognized when I was talking to her was that part of my frustration was myself. And I recognized that my attitude and the way that I thought were kind of working against me, and that I was going to have to facilitate my own paradigm shift mm-hmm. in order to even start to move forward.
Yeah.
And so I read a couple books, and that's kind of where my self-work started. And that's what eventually led to this self-care platform, is that it really came out of this very deeply personal experience that I had with it, where I was able to pull myself out of this hole using self-care practices and strategies, which I didn't realize that's what they were at the time. But in hindsight, I recognize now that that's what that was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in the pre-chat, you mentioned Angela Watson's book, Unshakable. And, you know, it resonated with you because what she wrote in that book kind of made you feel like what you were experiencing was okay.
Yeah. And I tell everybody that I recommend this book to, which I do highly recommend it to everyone, is that it's not that the ideas in the book are revolutionary. Mm-hmm. It's that they are so affirming, is that a lot of the things that I was doing that I thought weren't good enough were actually good enough, such that somebody else had written about them, somebody that I really admired and respected in the education space. And so it kind of made me kind of dust myself off and think, wait a minute, you've been kind of beating yourself up over not doing all of these things that you've put on this pedestal over here in these ideas that you think make a great teacher, when the things that you have been doing that you were so hard on yourself for are actually things that are okay, or things that are great teaching strategies, or things that are actually good for kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said a little bit about that you invested in yourself more professionally. You started going to conferences, and you weren't intending on, you know, building your own wellness site or brand, right? But that's kind of what came out of it. So walk me through a little bit through how the Afro Educator came out of all this.
Yeah. So I read Unshakable and I was feeling really empowered. And right after I read that book, I thought, okay, so I've never invested, you know, at this point I've been teaching 6 years and I had never invested in myself professionally in a way that was intentional. I had gotten my master's two or three years into my career. And so for a while, that was my professional development. But my heart really wasn't in it. It wasn't something I was passionate about. It was one of those things where I went through the motions because, you know, I wanted to say that I did it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm actually going to connect with other teachers and other education professionals outside of the people that I have to interact with in my community and, mm-hmm. and at work and at my school. And then I was thinking, okay, I'm also going to go to at least one conference that is not required, that is not a mandate, that I am going to go just for my own professional growth and enjoyment. It will also simultaneously, hopefully, help me connect with other educators who maybe are like-minded and who are there for similar reasons. And so I decided to create a Twitter. My first step to doing this was to create a Twitter. I knew that it was that a lot of educators were on it. My mom, who teaches at the college level, had been trying to convince me to get one for years. And so, you know, I decide I'm going to create a Twitter. I'm like, I need a name. Mm-hmm. I need a name that's not my name. I want something cutesy. I want something with a little wordplay. And like divine inspiration, the Afro Educator just popped in my mind. just as an homage to the fact that, you know, I am African American. And also I loved that it was educator instead of teacher, because I feel like educator is so much more holistic. And I feel like when we hear the word teacher, we automatically think of someone that is in that classroom space, mm-hmm. as opposed to someone who has the capacity to educate in any scenario, in any setting. Mm-hmm. So I come up with this name, I create this Twitter, and I just decide, you know what? I'm just going to tweet about my experiences. I'm going to read about other people's experiences. I'm going to get some micro PD and, you know, keep up with the latest and greatest in 140 characters kind of situation. And I think that a couple of teachers that I followed, and I don't exactly remember who they are at this point, but I had seen some tweets about self-care. And at this time, self-care still wasn't really on my radar. And I retweeted them. And so about a month and a half after I created this Twitter account, I had a gentleman, his name is Dr. Will, actually. He has his own podcast. He's a kind of in the ed tech space. Mm-hmm. And he says, I see that you've got some cool tweets up about self-care. Would you like to come on my podcast? Now, mind you, I've never been on a podcast. I don't really listen to a lot of podcasts. At least at this point in my life, I didn't. And self-care wasn't really my thing. I just kind of, you know, tweeted some thoughts in response to a couple of things I had seen on Twitter earlier that day. And I maybe had 25 tweets at this point. Uh-huh. So he sends me this pre-checklist of things that he is wanting to discuss on his podcast, and it's all self-care related. Mm-hmm. And as I'm going through these questions and answering them and kind of, you know, reflecting on what I think about these questions, I just word vomit, right? Like things started coming out and I was like, oh my gosh, I think there's something here. But I was really nervous to create a niche in that, because I just was like, I'm going to run out of stuff to say. I'm going to be copying what other people say. There's already people in this space. I don't want to overcrowd it. I just don't feel like I have a lot to bring to the table. And so that podcast went really great. And at the end of that conversation, I took that opportunity to ask Dr. Will what he thought about a way that I could, you know, how he felt about essentially me kind of choosing this niche of self-care, and what advice he would give for someone in my position who was looking to share their voice, and who was really new to the teacher social media scene. And that was one of the things he said. He said, pick something where people know that if they come to your page, or if they come to your Instagram, or if they come to your Twitter, they're going to get great information on blank. Mm-hmm. And I knew when he said that I wanted it to be teacher wellness, teacher self-care. And it started from there. And that was officially, I want to say that was mid-September, somewhere around this time in 2018. And that's really when I was like, okay, I'm really going to invest in this and commit to really talking about, you know, my teaching journey, but as it relates to how I'm managing to teach and also thrive outside of teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was kind of a wake-up call for you. You said just as you recorded that podcast, right? And, you know, you kind of re-enter the classroom that fall and, you know, a little bit disappointed from not having gotten that other job, but then realizing as you did this conversation, okay, this is really what I want to be passionate about. And then, you know, through the last couple of years, you know, it's really grown, your following's grown, and how have you been able to provide either that micro PD or the macro PD, maybe at your local level as well, or through any virtual opportunities in the past, you know, 6 months of the pandemic or prior to that? So tell me a little bit about any of these opportunities that you're providing to other teachers.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as my own presence on social media, which my primary platform is Instagram, although I do have Facebook and Twitter, mm-hmm. and I'm mostly active on Instagram. But I do a lot of my kind of PD on there through just sharing my own stories and then usually coupling that with some kind of tip or a bit of advice or some sort of resource that has also helped me. Generally, anything that I talk about is something that I've personally experienced or encountered or worked with that helped me or impacted me in some way, and I feel like it helps someone else. So that's sort of my primary, you know, interaction, kind of daily or weekly interaction there. As far as on a more formal level, I've been involved with a couple of, I don't quite want to call them conferences, but they were labeled virtual conferences. And this was in the spring and summer of this year, where we basically were on Instagram stories and there was a lineup of about 20 people. And we each had 5 to 7 minutes to come on and talk about a specific targeted resource or, paradigm or whatever it was that we wanted to share with that audience at the time. And it was just this really quick, you know, you really had to boil it down to the essence of what you wanted to communicate or the essence of what, you know, you wanted the audience to receive. And so that was really fun and really interesting because Instagram stories are so popular and are such a quick and easy way to get resources and tools and connect with other people. And then I also was able to do a recorded professional development session on what I call the good teacher narrative, which talks about those pervasive ideas that we have of what good teaching looks like. And so I was able to do a virtual gallery walk and my actual presentation. I think I did it through Zoom at that point, but I was able to offer that as well. And I was able to do that same session virtually for another conference as well. So just having opportunities to, you know, talk about what I love, which is this teacher self-care and teacher wellness in these virtual spaces essentially offering these pre-recorded sessions to these various conferences. And then locally, I haven't had the opportunity to do the PD yet because for a long time, I was really close to the vest about the stuff that I was doing with the Afro Educator because I feel like teacher wellness is catching on, but it's still a pretty foreign concept. And there are still some spaces that you can go into where you can feel when you start to talk about teacher self-care and teacher wellness, that there's almost like this judgment of, oh, well, that sounds selfish. Mm-hmm. Or how can you not take something home when there's so much to be done? Or how can you turn your teacher off? And I feel like it's still in a lot of spaces. There's just this idea, again, that narrative that is so ingrained in us that we have to look and be and feel and think all of these certain ways in order to be here for the right reasons or in order to do well at our job. So I would say it's only been within the last year that I was feeling more confident about going to my administration and saying, listen, this is something I'm passionate about. And this is something that I want to use to advance our school culture and our school community. So in the spring, or maybe it was the late fall of last year, I went to my principal and I expressed my passion for teacher wellness and self-care. And what I learned was how I could couple that with what he believed about growth mindset and the kind of culture that he wanted to create at our school. And I told him that I'd love to take the opportunity to introduce some things to our staff and to our school environment that were self-care based, but that I felt would also advance his cause in improving our teacher-to-teacher relationships and improving our teacher-to-admin relationships and improving the attitude and climate of our school altogether. And so the way that I did that wasn't necessarily through PD, but it was through asking him to support me in getting certified as a Happy Teacher Revolutionary. I'm not sure if any of your listeners are familiar with Dana Thomas, who's the CEO of Happy Teacher Revolution, but she, you know, essentially created this way to facilitate teacher support groups across the nation, and you can become certified as a revolutionary so that you can facilitate these support groups in your own school. And so that's exactly what I did. I asked my principal to support me in, you know, helping me get this training and helping me get this professional development. And so my line of thinking is that by hosting these Happy Teacher meetings and by kind of introducing myself in this way to the wellness space in my school, that I can then be able to also offer other professional development opportunities once other teachers get an opportunity to enter the wellness space in a very kind of relaxed and non-judgmental way. You know, these meetings are very much sharing spaces, not advice or judgment spaces. And so I think by opening up this wellness environment that way, that it's going to be a little less daunting for those teachers who are still kind of side-eyeing it. Mm-hmm. So that then maybe they'll be open to some of the other more radical professional development opportunities that I would hope to be able to offer in the future.
Yeah, that's so interesting to find out kind of your own journey through this and how, you know, you're looking to the future. And I had Dana Thomas on as well. So yeah, I still haven't put her episode out, but yes, it is coming before yours is being published. So, you know, she talks a little bit about the certification process and, you know, how she started the Happy Teacher Revolution. So, you know, and I think this is so important today, you know, and people really recognized it during the pandemic because of that upheaval and how we were teaching and teaching from home with our kids at home and everything. But I hope, you know, that this is a time where, you know, people are really looking to self-care. And I can resonate with you when you said, like, some of those teachers are so judgy. Like, I mean, I would say probably the last 3 or 4 years I taught, I decided I wasn't going to take work home, right? You know, as an English teacher, it's hard to not a lot of the time. And there's certain yes. times of the year when grades are due and, you know, you just have those piles of paper and, you know, it's, you just got to realize there is a time where you have to turn work off and focus on what's important.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the time I would take walks around the building, you know, you could sit in your room the whole planning period, but, you know, I decided, you know, the last, I would say 3 or 4 years I taught to just be intentional about getting out of the classroom during the planning period or lunch, right? Because you could be there all day. You could sit there for 9 or 10 hours and see those four walls, right? But it doesn't do good for your mental health. I mean, you know, outside the building, getting some fresh air, you know, maybe seeing other teachers in the building that aren't in your department or that don't have classrooms near you is good. And yeah, so, I mean, I think hopefully, you know, whenever things go back more in the building and everything, there'll be more teachers that, you know, still take the self-care into mind and, you know, join the Happy Teacher Revolution, you know, follow your Instagram, your Twitter, and read some of your advice. And this segues a little bit into my next question, which is, how is your schedule this year, the 2021 school year? We talked a little bit of the pre-chat and, you know, you really need that self-care in the schedule you have.
Yeah. So I am currently teaching, so I teach ELA, for anybody that I didn't mention that for, and I don't remember if I mentioned that in my bio or not. But I'm an ELA teacher and I'm currently teaching 2 face-to-face classes and 1 virtual class. So my schedule currently is face-to-face, virtual, face-to-face. And currently my district is still requiring all of the minimum minor and major grades. So that's 8 minor grades and 3 major grades for 9 weeks, which essentially means that I should be formally assessing something every week, sometimes twice a week. And so, yeah, my schedule has been really fun because so face-to-face, I have 20 in each class, which is a reduction. Usually we're around that 30 to 32 mark because our school is really small and we've outgrown it. But our new school won't be built for quite a few years to come. So we have to work within the confines of what we have. The way that I'm managing that is just by being really intentional about what matters most. Angela Watson has a book called Fewer Things Better, which is actually her newest book. It came out this past spring, or maybe it was the spring of 2019. I think it was the spring of 2019. And I flew through it. And essentially the book is what it talks about, which is focusing on what matters most and saying no to certain things so that you can say yes to better things. That coupled with the book Start With Why by Simon Sinek, which I recommend to anyone who is in any kind of leadership position, have been critical in my mindset, which are focusing on what's most important. I found that during the pandemic, so many people were focused on certain tools. And I think even now, teachers who are teaching virtually for the first time, which includes me, are so focused on, you know, what about this tool? What about this app? And making everything, you know, technology based, that they're focused more on the tools more than on the why.
Yeah.
Right. And what I learned from both Angela Watson and Simon Sinek's texts are that why you do something matters most.
Yeah.
The what and the how are simply manifestations of your why. And so when I came into this year, my why was to make, you know, for my students to feel seen, heard, cared for, safe. And so those have been my primary focal points. And anything that falls short of that, I try to refocus my attention back to that question, are you doing, or do you feel like you're doing what matters most?
Mm-hmm.
Because at this point, I'm going to be really transparent. There's a likelihood that I will not meet those grade minimums for the quarter or what have you.
Yeah.
However, I feel really confident about what I'm doing based on the feedback that I've gotten from parents and based on the feedback that I've gotten from students. And the feedback that I receive has nothing to do with, oh, I love the way that you teach commas and punctuation, or I love that you did this activity or that activity. It all has to do with how they feel.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, parents tell me I can tell that my child feels important, or I like the way that your classroom feels, or the vibe, you know, some of my kids use that word, the vibe that I get when I walk into your classroom. And for me, especially during the time of this pandemic, when there's been so much trauma and so much just emotional turmoil, that is the most important thing, because there's not going to be any academic achievement if those other mental, emotional, social needs or deficits aren't addressed. And so, honestly, I'm at that point in my career where that stuff, the stuff that I consider most important, matters more to me. And I will, you know, stand on a hill and defend that if I need to,
yeah,
because of what I know it does for students and how I know that that will pay off academically later. No, I may not have those grade minimums and that sort of thing. However, I would almost be willing to bet that when my students do perform, it's at a very different level, mm-hmm, because I've built that foundation on all of those other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important to say, because at this point, when schools or districts are focusing on academic content instead of the social emotional well-being and the vibe that you're providing in your classroom, you know, they're focusing on the wrong things. So
yeah,
that leads a little bit into, I wanted to talk about inequities in education kind of in your setting. You teach in a rural environment where a lot of families, at least in the spring, didn't have access. And you said also there were a lot of families that didn't even have a vehicle to drive to like Wi-Fi hotspots. So how does it look right now in your district, and how are you trying to meet those students' needs?
Yeah, absolutely. So our students who are currently virtual, before their parents were able to make the official decision that they wanted them to be virtual, they had to sign paperwork stating that they had, you know, internet access and that they would be able to provide this and that. They also signed a piece of that paperwork that stated that they would be home during school hours in order to support their students' learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we can see or we can infer that the issue with that is, if you're a parent or you're a family in a scenario where you know that you don't feel safe sending your child to school, but you also don't have access,
yeah,
you're going to sign the paperwork and do what you need to do and say what you need to say in order to do what you feel is best,
yeah,
for your family's safety. However, what that does is it automatically creates that inequity, because there's no in-between option, right? There's no kind of hybrid where you can come to school for this many days and then be virtual this many,
yeah,
days for either student. So there's that. And I'll be honest, there's not really a way to deal with that. I try to make myself during my office hours, I try to make myself as accessible as possible to troubleshoot some of these issues. But ultimately what ends up happening is these families and these students are kind of, I don't want to say left out to dry, but at this point, it's sort of everything's being pushed down onto classroom teachers to handle. If a student isn't showing up, we are supposed to call that family every time that student doesn't show up. Or if an assignment isn't turned in, we're kind of expected to badger that family. And I feel like it puts families in a tough position because all of them don't necessarily want to, nor should they have to, you know, admit what their financial situation is or what their hardship is or what their barrier is to learning. But at the same time, as the teacher, you want to address that barrier so that you can do your job. So we're kind of in a tough position with that because there's just no easy way to manage it right now. It's the thing that I found best is just having those open lines of communication. And there have been so many times where I've had to say, I'm so sorry that I can't provide more support with this. Maybe you could try to reach out to this person or this entity or this organization. You know, the most that I can do is sort of be well-versed myself so that I can try as best I can to direct them to someone who should be able to help them further.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, like you said, all you can do, and, you know, knowing which organization they can contact and, you know, where to plug them in. I mean, you know, hopefully as we go on with the year and depending on how long the pandemic lasts or, you know, how long it is until a vaccine, you know, that those students will, you know, be able to access some of the content.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think too, and I just remembered this when you were talking, this kind of memory was triggered, but just before this podcast, I had a parent reach out to me who's reached out to me before saying, you know, I'm such and such's parent and such is failing all of their classes and we don't know how to help. We don't know how to help our child. We feel like we're not equipped to handle the technology needs and to help with, you know, these different technology platforms, but we also don't feel safe sending our student to school. I mean, email literally said, help. What can we do? Can you help us? And that just makes me think, and I've said this to a couple of friends before, I do think that districts have some culpability in the execution of whatever their reopening plans are. And so for my district, having required parents to sign documentation stating that they would have that they would have reliable internet access and that they would be at home to help their students. Well, there's a gap there. And that gap is their knowledge and being able to access and operate the technology that the students have. And I mean, they weren't provided with any sort of training or any sort of, you know, and so there's an inequity there too, in that some of the parents who have chosen to keep their students home don't have the resources or haven't been provided with the resources to really support them. And so then that falls on us as well. But, you know, when you have a class load of 60 or 70 kids, you're limited in what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Correct. You know, and that's a point, like having some type of a parent university, right? Some type of you can access these slides or, you know, go to the socially distanced meeting or something just so, you know, they can get maybe an hour and a half worth of, okay, go to these sites or, you know, here's a list of free Wi-Fi hotspots in the community. But it sounds like a lot is falling on teachers' shoulders because, you know, the parents look to teachers to be the expert. They're looking to you to get the help because you're the first line of communication with their students.
Right, so, right.
Well, I've learned so much from you and about your work with the Afro Educator. And out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Number one would be start with why. Mm-hmm. And when you are experiencing self-doubt, or when someone is maybe causing you to experience those feelings. You feel like you're not doing enough. You feel like you're falling short, or you're feeling discouraged. Mm-hmm. I would encourage you to revert back to that question of, am I doing what I feel matters most for kids? Mm-hmm. And if you can answer yes to that question, take some of the pressure off, mm-hmm. because ultimately that's what matters most for your students. Because no matter how much content you get through or how much assessing you do, if those social, emotional needs aren't addressed and aren't met, and I mean in a way that's woven into your classroom or school culture, then the academic achievement isn't going to be at the level that it could be either. So focus on what matters most.
That's so important to remember. Where can people find you online and connect with you on Twitter or Instagram?
Absolutely. So on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, I am The Afro Educator. Afro Educator is all one word.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thanks for being my guest and have a great rest of your day.
Same. Absolutely. You do the same. Thank you so much.